RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
In March 2021, Lava, lesbian action for visibility in Aotearoa's stall booking at the Wellington Out in the City Fair was initially accepted, but later rejected by Wellington Pride, citing Lava's trans-exclusionary nature as incompatible with the event's principles. Lava members Hilary Oxley and Margaret Curnow filed a claim with the New Zealand Human Rights Review Tribunal, alleging unlawful discrimination based on their political opinions on trans issues and women's rights. And Margaret Curnow, a member and co-founder of Lesbian Action for Visibility in Aotearoa, Lava, joins us on RCR. Hi, Margaret. Thanks for coming on.
Hello, Paul. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to talk with you.
Okay, so we're going back a few years now, 2021. Not too far, but a few years. So this has kind of been cooking for a while. So at first, Wellington Pride accepted the booking. No problem.
That's right. They did.
Okay.
We booked it on the 5th of March for the fair on the 27th.
Yeah. So they accepted it initially, but then rejected it. How much notice did you have when they rejected it? Just interested?
4 days. They rejected it on the 23rd and the fair was on the 27th.
Oh, okay. So that would have been a surprise to you at the time, I would imagine.
Absolutely. It was a real shock.
And based on trans-exclusionary nature of Lava, how do you think they came to that conclusion?
It was to do with a demonstration that we had had outside the Ministry for Women on the 8th of March, International Women's Day. And essentially, because we don't think men can become women or lesbians, they call us trans-exclusionary.
So wasn't everybody part of the rainbow community and suddenly you find yourself, you're not in it?
We're not in it, exactly. And that was our concern and our confusion and our, I suppose, hurt is the best way of describing it, that we are part of that community and many of our group were involved in the very early days of Pride being celebrated in Wellington and suddenly we're not wanted. Other people's views were more important than ours.
Has the community, we'll get to the detail in a moment, has the community been hijacked then? Is that a fair word to use?
I wouldn't like to say they've been hijacked, but the organisers of the event had very particular, what they called a very particular kaupapa, which said there was no room for people who had opinions like ours.
How did they treat you, Margaret? Were they businesslike? Were they aggressive? Were they, you know, describe for us how they treated you?
No, not they were perfectly reasonable, but they didn't follow their own kaupapa, which was that they were willing to have the hard conversations, to talk about issues and would welcome everyone to Pride events. That's what was on their website. So they didn't follow their own guidelines in this and they didn't respond to our email requesting a meeting. So although they were perfectly civil, they weren't aggressive, they weren't horrible,
yep.
They didn't do what their own words said they would do.
Okay, so what did Lava then do?
First of all, we went to the Human Rights Commission and made a complaint and we had a mediation session.
Yep.
And because there was no resolution, then our next step, which we took a lot of time to consider, but the next step available to us was to go to the Human Rights Review Tribunal.
What was the mediation process like?
I can't talk. We've signed a confidentiality agreement. That was part of what has to happen when you do mediation.
Right.
With Human Rights Commission.
Okay, fair enough. So it's with the Human Rights Review Tribunal. Now, Pride, as I understand it, denies Lava's opinions are political opinions and argues that their support for known anti-trans activists like J.K. Rowling and Julie Bindle are evidence of transphobia. There's that word.
That's right, indeed. Well, we don't think we're transphobic or anti-trans. What we are is pro-lesbian.
Yeah. Who's representing you?
Nicolette Levy is our lawyer.
And how significant is this case for folk like you with gender, and there are many of our listeners with gender-critical beliefs?
Well, it's a really important case, Paul. Really important in a number of areas. The first area that it's important in is that it's a challenge to New Zealand for the political opinion definition. So the political opinion is one of the protected characteristics, if you like, views in the Human Rights Act. And it's been defined quite narrowly up till now, like as in party political, you know, the parliamentary political. And we're saying, no, these sorts of views are political views. So in that sense, it's really important in terms of legislation, because it will be groundbreaking if our views are recognised as political. But we are one of a number of cases worldwide, of course, where people's views are being challenged. Not their views are being challenged, sorry, their right to hold their views is challenged. Yeah. And in pretty much every case, that right has been upheld, as it was here in New Zealand when Speak Up for Women took a case about their rights to hold such views, and that was upheld in the High Court here.
So you're what, reasonably confident?
Very hopeful, yes, but one never knows.
Does it worry you that these institutions of state, you know, those sorts of quasi-government operations have kind of become activist in their operation and are not as reliable, let's say, as they might have used to be?
Yeah, it certainly worries us that those some ministries of government and others, as you say, quasi-government, that they have adopted, it seems uncritically, the views that say men can be women and this should never be questioned.
How do you explain that?
Look, it's extraordinary to look at, and it's really hard to explain because it has taken off. It just over the last few years, it's just gone crazy, and it's very, very difficult to explain.
Yeah, we all struggle.
Yes.
So your response to the accusations of being trans-exclusionary and the claim that your presence would make events unsafe for trans people, what do you think they mean by unsafe?
Well, that's a really good question and very hard to answer, because obviously there's no threat to any physical safety. So my thinking is that what they mean by that is that when we are there, irrespective of what we're doing or what we're saying or not saying, that somehow, what does unsafe mean? I mean, to me, I'm unsafe if, you know, a man's climbing through my window at night. That's what unsafe means, or coming after me with an axe. You know, people's views don't make me feel unsafe, but it would seem that for these people, our views make them feel unsafe. But what does that mean? And how solid are they in themselves and their beliefs if our mere presence makes them feel unsafe? I don't understand it.
Well, that calls into, you know, question mental states and mental health and things like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, maybe. It would be really good to have them answer the question, because if I think back to the early 80s and the days of homosexual law reform, I mean, the vitriol that we as lesbians and gays received, you know, from members of parliament and from strangers. Norm Jones, exactly, telling us to crawl back into the sewers that we came from.
I remember.
I didn't feel unsafe. So I don't know. Is it their lack of resilience?
Is it a kind of blackmail?
Well, it's certainly used against us, but I don't know what they're hoping to achieve, because I don't know anyone who understands what they mean by that. Like, what is it about the presence, our presence, that makes them feel unsafe? And interestingly enough, at the actual Michael Fowler Centre, on the day of the fair, we were the ones who were being physically threatened, not them. We had a little protest outside on the day of the fair, and there was a huge group of trans allies, trans people and their supporters, who were waving despicable placards and yelling and screaming and swearing at us, making very insulting comments, and really being quite intimidating at one stage, coming up and sort of surrounding us, you know. So if anyone was unsafe on the day, we were.
It's like a 180-degree projection. What they say is what they do. What they accuse others of is what they do.
Yes, exactly. Yes, is what they actually do. Yeah, I know. I mean, try and hold an event. You know, like just a couple of weeks ago, the Women's Rights Party held an event in Wellington, which I was at, with Sal Grover, who you may
Sal,
have heard
we
of.
Know. We know Sal.
You know Sal, yeah. And a whole group of them were outside probably for about an hour, making lots of noise in the hope that we wouldn't be able to hold our event, just like they tried to do or did do at Albert Park in Auckland.
Yeah.
It seems they somehow don't want us to be able to gather together, and they don't want free speech because they say it's hate speech. So there's no room to have an opinion that differs from theirs. And if we do, it's hate speech and it makes them unsafe.
Did you take note of the mix of the most recent demo that you're talking about? Did you make a note of the mix of the people, you know, yelling and saying whatever they were saying to you? Just curious to know.
At the Sal Grover event?
Yeah.
No, they were outside and we were inside. I didn't see them. We just heard them.
Right, gotcha.
I mean, their aim of disruption didn't work because they were background noise as opposed to in-your-face
gotcha.
Noise. So it didn't stop us.
Mm. What sort of support have you received from the lesbian and broader LGBTQ plus community here in New Zealand regarding the legal battle and the issues that you've raised?
Well, the LGB community is not really a community, you know. We've received a lot of support from lesbians and a lot of support from the LGB Alliance, groups like that. So people who are not blindly accepting of trans ideology and gender theory, huge support, and from overseas as well.
Yeah, I think Rachel Stewart said on this program that she wants a divorce from that.
Well, it's very, very difficult, the situation, because you can't have a free and open exchange of views. And that, to me, is the sad thing about it, that we can't actually have discussions about this. I can't ask them questions and they can't ask me questions and listen respectfully to each other's answers. You know, that's what's sad, because we're never, ever going to make progress if we can't do that.
Well, one wonders if there any progress can be made. Well, currently, anyway, it seems like, them particularly are intransigent.
It does, and they are, as they were with this. When they sent us an email saying your booking's cancelled, and we said, can we meet with you to talk about this? And they didn't, there they were rude. They didn't even respond to that. And it's the same behaviour as we see all the time. There's a label. As soon as you ask a question, there's a label of anti-trans, hateful, transphobic, bigoted. And that's it. That's the end of the discussion.
You mentioned Sal Grover, and obviously Tickle versus Giggle is quite an important Australian constitutional case. Do you see your case being some kind of parallel in terms of, you know, rights for women, particularly lesbians?
Yes, there are some parallels. It's not a complete parallel, of course, because Australia has slightly different legislation, and theirs is not a lesbian case, and ours is about our right as lesbians to meet together, to hold the views that we hold and to have them recognised as opinions that are protected under legislation. So there are some similarities, but not a complete parallel.
But it's the perception and position of women, really, in the end, isn't it? This is what it comes down to.
Yes, it is. It does. And, I mean, Sal's case comes down to, it's almost like a clash of rights, you know, the right of one person to be not discriminated against because they are transgender, and the right of women to gather in a women's space. without transgender people.
So, Margaret, what happens now? Where is the case?
Well, we're waiting for a hearing date. At the moment, there's been an exchange of documentation, discovery, as they call it, in legal circles. So exchanging all the evidence, we've given ours to them, they'll look at that, they'll give theirs to us, we'll look at that, go backwards and forwards. And when all of that, when everyone's happy, they've got everything and they've got all their questions answered, then we have a hearing, which is estimated probably end of this year or next year. So it's a very long process.
You'll need patience along the way, obviously. I'm just wondering, back in the 80s when you're fighting for your rights, I remember that time so well. I bet you never thought you'd be dealing with this then.
Oh, exactly. We thought we'd won. We thought we'd got it. And then we got protection under the Human Rights Act in 1993,
yeah.
which was for that LAVA was first formed, for visibility for lesbians in the Human Rights Act. And lo and behold, here we are. How many years later? 30 years later. Still fighting.
Yeah, here we go again, round two.
Round two. Wouldn't have believed you, Paul, if you'd said that to me in 1987 or 1994. Wouldn't have believed that this could happen.
I could never have foreseen it, so that wouldn't have happened.
No.
Yeah. All right, Margaret, thanks for coming on RCR and telling us about that. It's really interesting, and we'll follow it. You know, obviously some time to go yet, but we'll keep an eye on things. And
yes, thank you.
And maybe have another chat when the time comes. So thanks for coming on our station.
Thank you very much indeed. Thanks, Paul. Bye-bye.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.